Welcome to the Gen Z Stoic Podcast,
where every week we strive to lead younger generations on a path to virtue through the insight of Stoic teachings and personal stories from our lives as Gen Z Stoics.
Hello and welcome to this week's Seneca Stoic Reading. I'm your co-host, Ren, and this week we're going to be checking out Letter 10 from Seneca's Letters from a Stoic. Now this one is quite short, also free on the internet. It is not in the paper text that I have. And this one is Seneca basically recapping his conclusion on being alone with yourself. It seems that he contradicts himself from time to time, but this one he kind of sets the record straight. And so this one we're going to call on living with yourself. So if we begin here, Seneca starts out by saying, "Yes, I do not change my opinion. Avoid the many, avoid the few, avoid even the individual. I know of no one with whom I should be willing to have you shared. And see what an opinion of you I have, for I dare to trust you with your own self. Crates, they say, the disciple of the very Slobo whom I mentioned in a former letter, noticed a young man walking by himself and asked him what he was doing all alone. I'm communing with myself, replied the youth. Pray be careful then, said Crates, and take good heed, you are communing with a bad man. Context here. Crates of Thebes, I believe, was the mentor of Zeno. So Zeno, the founder of Stoicism, this is his mentor that Seneca is using here in an example to prove the point that being able to trust yourself with yourself, right? Trusting yourself to be alone and that you won't be corrupted when you are alone is like one of the greatest powers that you can have. And why is this? It has to do with, and we talked about this in our isolation episode, I've talked about this a lot because Seneca, you know, goes over mandatory, necessary isolation all the time and the value of being able to be introspective. But anyway, what Seneca is getting at here is that when you initially are trying to be alone with yourself, you are not the best person, right? Because think about it, if you're working like a 9-to-5, you come back and like you consume some news and stuff, and then you try and be with yourself and have some thoughts, you're corrupted by so many external things that those corruptions start to kind of seep into what you think of when you're alone. And since you have no one to really like check those thoughts, that's when you get to a dark place. The thing that I think about, if we want to think about like a modern day example of this, is the kind of echo chambers that we have in politics in America nowadays, where I guess you're not necessarily by yourself, but you have a lot of people who live out their politics and find their political opinions purely from online communities. And then they use those communities to kind of boost their knowledge. I'm forgetting the term for what that means or what the term is for that, but basically you just amplify your beliefs because you aren't challenged by anybody to think about the other side. And when you are alone with yourself, which I feel like when you are basing all of your opinions, political opinions online, you are really alone. The Twitter community, the Truth Social community, the 4chan, whatever you're on to confirm these political beliefs that you have, you really are alone because you're not seeing any of these people. You're not being forced to have a conversation. It's just an online forum where you type a few things. Everybody agrees. You're like, oh, the other side sucks and, you know, isn't smart and is once the worst for this country and we're the best. And that kind of political division BS. But that's just the modern example of what Seneca is pointing at here, where if you are somebody who's trying to be a really, really good person, but you haven't gotten there yet, right? And you're at the beginning of the journey where you realize, you know, my life really sucks or something, or I don't have the qualities that I would like, I don't have the character that I believe that I should have, what have you. When you're at the starting point, the worst thing you can do is trust yourself to be able to handle all of your problems and all of your thoughts. Because that's like being a beginning hiker, right? And thinking, you know what, I'm going to go climb Mount Everest by myself. You know, I've gone on like 2 hikes in my life. And now I'm going to go climb Mount Everest by myself and nothing's going to go wrong. No, the best time to do that is when you have 2,000 hikes underneath you. You have life experience underneath you. You've gone through situations and you've worked on, in this case, your hiking ability. But if we were to apply that to basic life, then when you start to realize that you look in the mirror and you don't like the person that you are or something like that, where you just think you need a reset and you need to become a better person, that is not the time to then just go it alone and say, I need to be isolated all the time. Seneca leaves that privilege to very few. And, you know, he's really praiseworthy of Lucilius here, saying that Lucilius qualifies as one of the people who he trusts to leave him alone with himself. And that takes a lot of personal work and a lot of personal effort. So it's not always, you know, when we talk about isolation, that isolation is the best. It's once you've kind of taken that first step and you kind of realize, you know, where your points are, where you might need help, you might not be able to handle your thoughts, things of that nature. You kind of have to have that self-awareness first, that self-understanding, that experience before you then rely on being isolated all the time. Because if you jump, you know, really jump into the deep end when it comes to what's my purpose, what morals am I living with, which are like life's foundational questions, you just hop right in the deep end, you're probably going to drown, and then you're going to become corrupted and you betray yourself. Rather, you have to wait, take some time, be introspective, but still have those great people around you, which is, you know, again, proof that Stoics, for the bad rap they get for being apathetic, really relied on other people and advised people to rely on other people. So that is the basic conclusion here from what we start with. So Seneca continues, when persons are in mourning or fearful about something, we are accustomed to watch them that we may prevent them from making a wrong use of their loneliness. No thoughtless person ought to be left alone. In such cases, he only plans folly and heaps up future dangers for himself or for others. He brings into play his base desires. The mind displays what fear or shame used to repress. It whets his boldness, stirs his passions, and goads his anger. And finally, the only benefit that solitude confers, the habit of trusting no man and of fearing no witnesses, is lost to the fool, for he betrays himself. I love, and sometimes I do this intentionally, sometimes I don't do it intentionally, I really love when my words match exactly what Seneca is saying. That's the end result if you're too isolated. And we talked about the difference between, in this episode on isolation, the difference between isolation and loneliness. If you are kind of feeling that inescapable loneliness and you're by yourself all the time, that's the wrong use. You're in the wrong place. Because feeling lonely leads to a lot of other dark thoughts, and then you become corrupted, you become emotional, and it doesn't lead down a good path. If you are isolated, then you have realized that there is value to being alone with your thoughts. If you're lonely, you are alone with your thoughts and you think it's wrong and you feel bad about it, right? That's kind of the distinction I make. So once you get to a place where you can really handle all of your thoughts and you have this good perspective, then you're not at as high a risk of betraying yourself. You're not going to spiral because you can't handle your thoughts or you can't handle the situation that happened to you. Once you kind of get to that point where you've kind of leveled out and you can handle reasonably whatever gets thrown at you, then is the time for isolation. And to echo Seneca's point here about loneliness, right? Like, obviously, when somebody has a family member die or something tragic happens to them, that's not when we all throw up our hands and are like, oh, let's let them deal with this. They got this. No. The traditional human response and the appropriate human response is when somebody has a tragedy happen to them, the community comes around them and supports them. And so that's just showing, again, like, when we are in these really dark places, there's not a good purpose for isolation because it becomes a loneliness epidemic there. But, you know, once you get that support from those great people to lift you on your journey and support you through those tough moments, then you can handle it and can become isolated and realize the benefits that solitude has, as Seneca mentions here. But if you don't do that, you don't take those steps and you just think that, you know, foolishly, you know, oh, well, now that I've said I'm going to become a better person, I can handle it all. I got this. Again, the Everest example. Very foolish. And you come nowhere close to the goal. Seneca continues again. Mark, therefore, what my hopes are for you. Nay, rather, what I am promising myself, inasmuch as hope is merely the title of an uncertain blessing. I do not know any person with whom I should prefer you to associate rather than yourself. I remember in what a great-souled way you hurled forth certain phrases, and how full of strength they were. I immediately congratulated myself and said, these words did not come from the edge of the lips. These utterances have a solid foundation. This man is not one of the many. He has regard for his real welfare. Speak and live in this way. See to it that nothing keeps you down. As for your former prayers, you may dispense the gods from answering them. Offer new prayers. Pray for a sound mind and for good health, first of soul and then of body. And of course you should offer those prayers frequently. Call boldly upon God. You will not be asking him for that which belongs to another. So first off here, again, I would talk about this is a very praiseworthy letter for Lucilius. This paints Lucilius in a really good light. And it also highlights to us readers that Seneca is saying in sort of a kind of roundabout way, not contradictory, that you should avoid crowds, as mentioned in a former letter. You should avoid, you know, friends who don't have your best interests in mind. And the best person that you can be friends with is yourself. But that is once you have conquered yourself. That is once you have become a person who has a solid foundation, not somebody who is lost looking for that foundation. See, when you have the confidence in yourself to handle any of these situations, as Seneca says here, the utterances have a solid foundation. You know, you're confident in your beliefs, confident in what you're saying, you're confident in your actions. Then at that point, there is nobody better to associate with than yourself, because you know how to keep yourself in check, you know how to keep yourself accountable, and you always keep your best interests in mind. There's nobody else in the world who's going to do those three things 24/7 for you. So it's really worth it to work on yourself and get to that place, because then you have that layer of security. Now, the second half of this starts to delve into prayer, which, you know, Stoicism is not really a denominational kind of thing. It's philosophy. If you believe in multiple gods, you believe in no god, you believe in a god, what have you. Seneca here mentions God, and, you know, I think this is a little bit religious. And it's an interesting note, because I believe in Seneca's time, Rome was kind of getting more and more degenerate. You saw more degenerate values pushed in Rome, and that's absolutely happening in Western society now. So just an interesting kind of parallel to make there. But what Seneca is saying here with his talk of prayer, I really like the last line: you will not be asking him for that which belongs to another. Too often, I saw this when I was, you know, more devout in my faith as a Catholic man, and, you know, went to church often and was really involved in that. But too often, you know, people pray for things that are like, you know, I pray for wealth, or I pray for things that really are outside the reach of what prayer is for, and outside the reach of the person itself. Seneca here says the only thing that you should pray for is a sound mind and for good health. And those are both things that are, A, really under your control, and B, something that's within your own realm. It doesn't affect anybody else for you to have a sound mind and good health. It's just the benefit of you. And so it's a humble request, and not something that's very, you know, extravagant and really drags on and goes away from what prayer is for. And the same thing is with purpose and wishes, if we wanted to take it outside of religion, right? We see people who walk through the day, and instead of, you know, just being happy, being grateful that, you know, they're feeling good, they're in a good mood, they're physically healthy, they can take care of business, all of these things that we really take for granted, just because, you know, it's just a blessing to wake up if we think about it, but we take it for granted. Instead, what we search for are things outside of ourselves. We see this nice car and we're like, wow, life would be so great if I could drive that nice car. See somebody living in a nice house and you're like, wow, you know, I really wish I can have that space one day. Or, you know, someone with a lot of money, someone with a watch, someone with clothes that you like. The examples go on and on and on, where there's these things that are outside of ourselves and are possession-based, and things that don't really boil down to how good a quality of life you're living that we wish for. And we neglect to simply wish for a sound mind and for good health. And then there's also the distinction, first of soul, then of body, which, of course, you know, we want to have high character, high morals, rather than a really ripped physique. I'm trying to achieve both, and I encourage everybody to try and achieve both, but one must come before the other, I believe. And that's what Seneca's saying here. He also says, ending this letter, "But I must, as in my custom, send a little gift along with this letter. It is a true saying which I have found in Athenodorus. Know that thou art free from all desires when thou hast reached such a point that thou prayest to God for nothing except what thou canst pray for openly." That's very difficult to say. Wow, a lot of thous, which is unusual for these letters, but okay, moving on. "But how foolish men are now. They whisper the basis of prayers to heaven, but if anyone listens, they are silent at once. That which they are unwilling for men to know, they communicate to God. Do you think, then, that some such wholesome advice as this could be given you? Live among men as if God beheld you. Speak with God as if men were listening." A very, very, very powerful quote at the end of this letter. Live among men as if God beheld you. Speak with God as if men were listening. So there's this kind of phenomenon in America where we're becoming more and more secular. And not to, you know, really argue for religion or anything like that. Those who know me and have kind of listened to my thoughts on religion on the podcast know I'm pretty neutral towards religion. I think, you know, if you want to be a really active participant of religion, that's great. Good for you. If you don't want to believe in religion and that's not something for you, similarly, good for you. But if we imagine the term God here as, you know, nature or some higher power or something that is like authority, speak with that person as if men were listening. So when you're praying, or when you're kind of talking with yourself, even when you're being introspective, when you're alone by yourself,
You have to be able to speak as if other people were listening. And that means that, you know, you shouldn't be ashamed of your struggles. You shouldn't be ashamed of the problems you're having. You shouldn't be ashamed of the emotions that you feel. You should work to improve all those things, but being ashamed of that only does you a disservice because you're afraid to work on it in public. You're afraid to share it with other people so that they may help you. You instead sit in your room and you share it with this, you know, higher power or fictitious thing or yourself, and you shut it off from the rest of the world. It's no way to live. And then live among men as if God beheld you, simply is saying, right, like, be a good person, be moral always. Do not, like, do these good things just because, you know, think you'll earn you brownie points in the eyes of others or in the eyes of God in terms of going to heaven. No, just do it because you're a good person and keep that 100% of the time, and then you're going to live much, much better. So I think it's interesting. Again, I'll note the parallels here of men being ashamed of the religion they're practicing, right? Seneca mentions here in Rome. And I think we're seeing a lot of that here in this country. And I don't want to say, you know, like, just religious views, but we're just ashamed to express our views or scared or embarrassed or something like that. And so we kind of shut them off. And, you know, we think, you know, it's just going to be safer. If I just go with the flow, whatever somebody tells me, I'm just going to go with the flow. I'm not going to argue with it. I'm not going to express my beliefs, none of that. And so what we see here is like kind of the domination of spirit where your beliefs take a sidestep. And that's a bit concerning. It's a bit concerning in society. And we saw how it played out in Rome. Hopefully it doesn't play out similarly in the West, but it might. And the way that you kind of resist against that wave is by just believing openly, not in religious values, a certain set of religious values, but believing in your morals, believing in what you stand for and articulating that constantly. We need more of that in this country. If it so happens that it relates to Christianity or Islam or Buddhism, Hinduism, whatever it relates to, that's perfectly fine. That's, you know, the beauty of a society as integrated as the United States or the West is it's very diverse. It's kind of that melting pot idea. And you being strong in your convictions and talking about them openly opens that dialogue, and we become stronger for it as a society. So not to take away from this letter, but my last conclusion kind of drawn out from the historical context with which it's written, but a very beautiful letter. I love the way that it ends. I love the example used at the beginning. And this has been letter 10 of Seneca on living with yourself. I have been your co-host, Ren. Be sure to follow the podcast, subscribe for more content, and check out our next Seneca Stoic reading next Wednesday.